Happy Pride, everyone. Feliz Día del Orgullo. Welcome. Welcome to East Shore Unitarian Church in Bellevue. My name is Reverend Maria Cristina, and I am your queer minister. We welcome you, especially if you identify as queer, gender nonconforming, trans, gay, lesbian, questioning. We celebrate you if you're coming out in kindergarten, preschool, fifth grade, on your 70th birthday, or your 90th. You were born this way, lovable, beautiful in all ways. I am so proud that we are a welcoming congregation. Thank you, East Shore community, for being a safe haven in these times especially.
Good morning. I have a testimonial here that I actually, some of you may have heard a bit of before. So I'm kind of going to reincarnate a little bit and add to. So I still remember when and where it all happened. April 1994, Sydney, Australia. I was on a business trip for Microsoft. I was in a forgettable hotel room. There had been so many. I had traveled a lot in those days. I spent more time in a hotel room than at home for several months. This particular day was on a weekend, so I had some downtime. Yet here I was, sitting on the edge of the bed in this hotel room, wondering why at 29 years old I was in freaking Sydney, Australia with time on my hands and on Microsoft's dime. Yet here I was sitting in this hotel room instead of out on a walkabout getting to know the lay of the land and its beautiful men. People. I wondered why, having this fantastic job at Microsoft that bestowed upon me business trips to places such as London, Munich, Paris, New York, Sydney, how was it that I still wasn't happy? I remember asking myself out loud, Ronald, what do you want? What is wrong? Why aren't you happy? The answer came to me so quickly and precisely without skipping a beat that it shocked me but filled me with a warm and comforting glow. I wanted a man in my life. I said it out loud to no one else but me, but it was the first time that I said it and listened. I was on a mission, and I had a knack for getting what I wanted. So I was stoked to say the least from that day onward. I went home and initiated a beautiful, wonderful, challenging, scary, and exciting life as a black gay male. I knew that I was embarking on life as a multi-minority in the United States of America, a double whammy. But I was the middle child of three kids. I had two wonderful parents who taught me everything I needed to know to be successful, strong-willed, confident, and ready for the world. As the middle child, I did everything differently. Today I'm in Seattle, and they are still in Phoenix. Today I've lived in Seattle longer than in Phoenix, but I still call Phoenix home because that's where my parents are. Today it's just my dad. Mom passed back in 2018 from cancer. But I still find myself absently wanting to call her on the phone just to say hey. I grew up in a loving, supporting family, yet I feared being rejected when I came out to my parents. I remember sitting in my dad's office that day at home. I struggled to get the words out. My mom sat there looking right at me, nodding her head up and down. She knew. FYI, your mother knows. My father sat at his desk, typing on his computer keyboard, not looking at me, pretending to be focused on whatever was on the screen. But in the end, they both told me that although they were from a different generation and didn't get it, they still loved me and always would. That was all I needed to hear. From that day on, I didn't care who knew. My mother knew, and that's all that mattered. I didn't just come out of the closet. I kicked that door off and made a cute little coffee table and chair out of it. I was the first in my family to graduate college. I graduated and landed my dream job at Microsoft, and I became one of four founding members and the first president of BAM, which was Blacks at Microsoft, that very first year I was there. A diversity organization that was Microsoft's very first. Today, it is one of the prominent organizations among their many diversity groups. And that experience introduced me to another diversity organization, GLEAN, Gay and Lesbian Employees at Microsoft, which is where I met my first boyfriend of 12 years. His name was Michael. He was French, and he was half French and half Greek. Though we're no longer together, we are still very close, and I talk to him often and cherish every moment we share. He was 9 years older, crazy smart, and immensely wise. He taught me so much, including patience and not dwelling on things that I could not control. Today, many of you know my better half, Ron Amaro. He's not here today because he works weekends as a transportation driver at Metro. We've been together now for 14 years, and he's been a proper e-ticket ride, to say the least. But dang it if he didn't just grab me by the heart. And on top of all of it, he can make me laugh like no one else. And that was one of the leading reasons I married that man right there on September 7, 2019. But before I wrap things up, I feel that I would do all of you a disservice if I didn't touch on the intricacies of being Black and gay today in the United States of America. One is not the same as the other, and I would need many hours and days to cover the multitude of complex levels that make up the tapestry of racism in our country today, because racism is everywhere. And not just in the straight world, it's alive and well in the LGBTQ world as well. Both communities have often gripped news headlines, both good and bad, and one has sadly risen to the top over the other, particularly when politics took a nosedive in January 2017. When I walked up here today, you could see right away that I was Black. You did not see that I'm gay. One I could keep to myself, the other I cannot. I don't generally have the luxury of hiding my race in places where it's not safe to be Black. However, as a gay man, I can resort to passing as straight, at least temporarily, and borrow that privilege when safety demands. This isn't easy, and safety is a right many in both communities are often denied. Continually facing discrimination is stressful. But the compounded effect of multiple layers of prejudice is particularly complicated. But let me be clear in stating, gay is not the new Black. So let me explain. I was called the N-word way before I was ever called the F-word. You have never seen and won't see heterosexual-only and gay-only water fountains, diners, buses, and schools in light of 75 years of oppressive Jim Crow laws. You have not and won't see homosexuals snatched away from their families at birth for the purpose of division and dehumanization. Homosexual men and women have never endured a slave trade for generations and witnessed their ancestors dying by the numbers during a middle passage and being sold for raw goods. Homosexuals will never face a societal norm that allows and even promotes them to be beaten because they are seen as property and treated like cattle with scripture as a basis for justification. So again, I say, gay is not the new Black, yet I am both. I am proud of who I am. I love that I am a Black gay man. I welcome the fact that I fit well into the false stereotypes. I can dance. I dress well. I love fried chicken. And yet, I'll only go glamping with the most beautiful linens in an RV with a shower, a toilet, and a comfortable bed. With that said, I say thank you for letting me share this small slice of who I am and how I came to be here. I look forward to continuing my life as a Black gay man with my family here at East Shore Unitarian Church.
Good morning. How can I follow Ron? I don't know. I'll be brief. I'm David Langrock, and I use he, him pronouns. The great James Baldwin oftentimes used the word infantile to describe this country's dominant or dominating sexual culture. I agree. Although I must say, I think Mr. Baldwin was being a bit harsh on the infants. As an infant, I was assigned male, and by the time I was 9, until the time I was 13 or 14, I deeply longed for touch and connection and, yes, young love with other boys. I was gay. During my late teen years, in addition to my maturing attraction to men, I became drawn to women as well. I was a budding bisexual. In the intervening years, up until now, I have never stopped changing. I stand before you now a queer, pansexual, cisgender man. In the words of the great Walt Whitman, I am large. I contain multitudes. My existence gives the lie to the patriarchal conception of male sexuality as being immutable, static, or solid, rather than being fluid and capable of change. Pride for me is a celebration that within every human is the capacity for longing and connections and love that defy some or all of the infantile or puritanical or patriarchal or heteronormative boundaries. It is a time for all of us to witness and celebrate those in the past and the present who transgress those boundaries and who have pride in who we are and who and how we love. Thank you.
I thought I would just say, I'm here, I'm queer, I think you're used to it, and sit down to save my voice, but I shared this testimony last time. It was a little bit longer, so I'm just going to be brief and say, in the late 80s, I joined the Episcopal Church in New York City, which offered inclusive services and programs for LGBTQ people and families. Then when I moved to Boston, I found the Unitarian Universalist Church, which welcomed me and my son, where I could bring my whole intersectional self as a queer mom, as an immigrant, Latinx, and as a social justice activist with deep roots in liberation theology, who had grown up in the Catholic Church with indigenous spiritual traditions. Talk about embodying a multitude. Coming out for me has become a spiritual practice, and it is so complex, as Ron so exquisitely showed us, right? The safety of it all, the privilege of it all. So every time I hear myself telling my story, along with feeling more certain, more proud, more compassionate towards myself and towards the person to whom I'm coming out to, I hold the complexities and have to, in a split second, figure out how safe I am, right? I could pass as many things. Sometimes I choose to, especially if I'm with family and friends, especially when my son was little. I no longer come out to give anybody an ultimatum, but to reveal my authentic self, to create a space where all of me can be seen and known, offering the same grace to the person in front of me. Coming out is still very, very risky. For some of us more than others, we are still very vulnerable to bullying, to violence, to stereotypes, to the religious and cultural barriers that separate us from the divine, or they try to. Coming out is still a very intimate, personal act, an ongoing one. as well as a public act of resistance against oppression. So some people might say that I could pass for straight, for white, for someone who was born in this country, pass as someone without religious beliefs and just call myself a UU. But I choose to come out in the many ways so that I can honor my worth and dignity again when it is safe. In doing so, and when I do so, I feel that I am creating an authentic space, an authentic community where we can see and hold and celebrate each other, building more spaces, not just safe spaces, brave spaces, where our allies and co-conspirators also risk, also look at their privilege. I am grateful for the friends who took the time to learn, to listen, and to make room in their hearts for our friendship to be transformed into something beautiful. There were many who did not. I still mourn that loss. Being an immigrant, you hold on to memories of family and childhood friends. And when you lose that, it leaves a void. I am grateful for welcoming communities, for our families, for our youth that are a source of courage and hope. As I said before, coming out for me now is a spiritual practice, a constant reminder that I stand on the shoulders of trans women warriors like Silvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson, proud and courageous Puerto Rican and African American warriors who, despite living under tremendous dangerous conditions, found a way to offer hope by creating a safety net, an underground railroad for homeless trans youth. Our shared ministry here includes being co-conspiring against bills and laws founded on hatred and transphobia. Now, as a queer elder, Latinx UU minister, I proudly lift up the names of Silvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson. They were the founders of STAR, Street Transvestite Action Revolutionaries. This was before we had the term transgender. STAR was founded in 1970 by Silvia and Marsha, the first street activists in New York City to fundraise while they were homeless. They were fundraising and advocating on behalf of homeless trans youth. Here we are, more than 50 years after Stonewall, facing waves after waves of anti-trans bills that jeopardize the very lives and well-being of our trans youth. Right now, there is a rainbow bridge being created as we speak to bring to safety trans people living in states where those anti-trans bills threaten their very existence. Entire families are being torn apart, families facing impossible choices in order to protect the most vulnerable members of their families. At times we want to believe that we've come so far from that night at the Stonewall Inn in 1969. And in some ways we have. Here I am, in the pulpit, an ordained minister, being able, having the privilege and the pride and the honor to say, I am your queer minister and I am so proud. But in some ways right now, it feels like we are being thrown back into times of horror, persecution, invisibility, and inhumanity. Today, let us recommit ourselves to live into the true spirit of pride, to be part of not only the rainbow that rejoices and expresses our pride, but also the rainbow bridge to safety, to justice, to freedom for all. No matter how you identify and express your gender identities, we must become the warriors that Silvia and Marsha taught us to be. an active part of this new revolution, the challenge against hateful politicians and inhuman laws. To bring our most vulnerable ones to safety must be our continued work and commitment. Until all of us are free, none of us are free. Sylvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson, presente, presente, presente. Amen.